Give me a recording of start date.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the EPDP Initial Report webinar taking place on the 29th of November, 2018 at 1400 UTC. All documentation and information can be found on the EPDP Wiki space. This webinar is being recorded. Please remember to state your name before speaking and to mute when not speaking. Recordings will be posted on the public Wiki space shortly after the end of the webinar. Thank you very much. I'll now turn it back over to our chair, Kurt Pritz. Please begin.
Thanks, Terry, and thanks very much, everybody, for joining this webinar. If you'll go on to the agenda, please, Caitlin. I just want to make a couple introductory comments, and then I'm going to turn it over to the ICANN support team to go through most of the materials, although I may have a point that I want to make from time to time on a particular topic. I want to make three points here in introduction. First is that this webinar contains some of the substance of the recommendations and questions in the initial report, but not too much. We really, there's really no way we could cover the depth of substance and materials and issues involved in the fraction of an hour that we're allotted to talk about this, and we want to leave time for questions. So this is primarily intended to introduce you to the initial report, how it's structured, why it's structured that way, and how to participate in the comment process. So more about process and mechanics than substance, although there will be some substance there. The second point I want to make is about the timing of the release of the initial report. So certainly we felt a great deal of pressure to release the initial report in time to preserve the deadlines we have for completing the work on this expedited policy development process. But, you know, on the other hand, if the initial report isn't good enough, then it would just serve as a delay rather than an expediting mechanism. And so the report has, you'll see 22 recommendations and questions for community input. And those recommendations, some of them have the tentative of agreement of everybody in the group, but some are still contended. And so what we wanted to do in this initial report is where there's specific recommendations, they exist, and where there's contention, we want the community to be able to opine with sufficient specificity so that the team is fully informed on the community input on this issue before we go forward. So that's the purpose of the questions for community input, is to provide on outstanding issues where there's still, you know, we could just call them divisions among the team about which way to best proceed on those issues. So we did that balancing and quite a bit of hand-wringing over the timing of the initial report. And, you know, while it was a leadership decision to go ahead and launch it, there was a general feeling that, you know, the combination of recommendations and questions provided enough information to the reader of the report to provide information on all the issues so that the team can go and complete its deliberations. And third, you know, there's members of the EPDP team in this webinar, and we don't have specific roles, and it's sort of difficult to choreograph that sort of thing. But I'll just say for the general attendees and the EPDP members, if an EPDP member wants to add a point or answer a question, just I encourage you to jump in the queue, and then if who's ever running the queue spots an EPDP member, maybe let them jump the queue, because it might be an answer to a specific question or a point they want to make. Let's say after discussing it, I think that's the best way to run that. So those are my comments. Again, thank you very much for joining. I'll turn it over to the ICANN support team now.
Thanks, Kurt, and hello, everyone. My name is Marika Konings, and I'm one of the members of the staff support team for this effort. And together with my colleague, Kaylin, I will be taking you through the rest of these slides. As Kurt, you know, the main objective is to provide you with a high-level overview of the report and its contents and assist you in providing input in the new format we're using for obtaining community input. You know, as also noted, you know, if you have any questions, we hope to have sufficient time at the end of the webinar for Q&A. You know, staff may be able to answer some of your questions. As noted, there are a number of EPDP team members as well that are on the call, so we hope that they will assist us as well in that regard. And, of course, you can already start putting any questions you may have in the chat, and we'll do our best as well to answer those there. So here you find at a high level what we're hoping to cover during today's webinar, and I think we'll just dive straight in. So for those of you that are maybe new to this effort, just a very brief background and overview of the effort. The expedited policy development process was initiated by the GNSO Council earlier this year. This initiation was triggered by the ICANN board's adoption of the temporary specification for GTLD registration data that basically triggered a requirement for the GNSO Council to, within a one-year time frame, confirm or not the temporary specification as a consensus policy. And that basically leads us up to the 25th of May of 2019, by which that would need to happen at the latest. And the charter of the EPDP outlines a number of charter questions, 52 to be specific, that the group is expected to answer and respond to in conjunction with proposed policy recommendations. The charter also foresees that the group is to work on a standardized access model to non-public registration data, but that is only to happen after gating questions that are identified in the charter are addressed, and as such, this is not a topic that is addressed or covered in the initial report. And as noted, the focus really of this first initial report and this first phase of work is really on the topics that are covered in the temporary specification and the related appendixes, but not the annex, which is also expected to be covered separately. And the EPDP team consists of a representation of the ICANN community and the different groups that expressed interest in participating in this effort have representation, as you can see here on this slide, in addition to liaisons from the ICANN board, ICANN org, as well as the GNSO Council. You may have seen this slide before. This is basically the timeline against which the EPDP team is conducting its work. And as noted before, this first phase of work is on a very tight timeline. There's basically time until 25th of May to finalize the report and recommendations and you know, have the board consider these for adoption. So I think what is to highlight here that you know, we're currently 66 days away from finalizing the report for submission to the GNSO Council, and that may hopefully also explain and appreciate everyone that you know, we have a public comment period of 30 days and there's no possibility to extend that as there just then won't be time for the group to consider that input and give it due consideration. So in order to get to this initial report, you can imagine that it has been a pretty intensive period for the EPDP team, noting this short timeline. The group has basically held 29 fully attended multi-hour meetings in a period of 13 weeks. In addition to that, there was also over 45 hours of face-to-face meeting time, which took place both at the ICANN meeting in Barcelona, which happened a couple of weeks ago, and previously in a separate face-to-face meeting in Los Angeles. So in order to get to where the group is now, and as has been reflected in the initial report, the group started off by a detailed review of the temporary specification, which was one of the first requirements under the charter, which resulted in the so-called triage report, where the group went through the different provisions of and the temporary specification, and then noted their agreement or disagreement with those specific provisions. That then really helped inform the subsequent deliberations on the charter questions and responses that were developed for those. That was to a large extent done collectively, but also a couple of small teams were formed to kind of tease out some of the topics and prepare draft responses.
The which French channel, please. I want to join the French channel if it exists.
Hi, I think someone needs to mute their line. Thank you.
Thank you.
A lot of work also went into documenting the purposes, the data processing activities, the lawful basis for each of those processing activities, the data elements required for these different purposes and processing activities, as well as identifying the responsible parties involved in the different processing activities. And that work has all been captured in the data element workbooks, which you can find as an annex to the initial report. And also a lot of time was, or a lot of focus went into prioritizing the work to really make sure that the critical issues are addressed before the temporary specification expires. So all that work has resulted in the initial report that was published last week for public comment. Here you find basically at a high level the overview, the structure of the initial report. The first part is an executive summary that provides a bit further information on the background and as well the approach that the EPDP team took for getting to the initial report. The second part of the report, the overview of our preliminary recommendations, is basically a compilation of all the preliminary recommendations and questions for community inputs that Kurt referred to earlier. So again, this brings us all together in a compiled version for your review. Section 3 of the report provides more detail on the systematic way in which the EPDP team has conducted its deliberations and has arrived at this initial report. And then Section 4 is really the heart of the report, as it contains the EPDP team's responses to the charter questions. It outlines the different positions on certain subjects and links the preliminary recommendations to information considered and deliberated. So that really provides you, hopefully, with a kind of full picture of what the EPDP considered and what the EPDP team, as a result, is recommending. And it also outlines some of the issues where there is no agreement yet and where different positions have been documented, which will hopefully inform community input and further deliberations. A brief section on the next steps, outlining what will happen once after the group receives the input through the public comment period. As there are a lot of acronyms and terminology in the report, we thought it would also be helpful to provide you with a glossary. So that section provides you hopefully with an overview of the different terms that are used in the report to facilitate your review of that. There's information included on the background of the effort, the membership, attendance, as well as early input that was obtained as one of the requirements of an EPDP. And then, as I noted before, Annex D really provides the detail on the different purposes that the group has identified and the different processing activities that are related to it, the data element, as well as parties responsible. So again, there you can really find the detail and the background to some of the recommendations in the report. So again, at a very high level, and as Kurt noted, it's really important for everyone to review the report and especially the recommendations and the thinking that went into that to fully appreciate the work that has been undertaken, and as well for you to be able to respond to the questions in the public comment forum. But again, at a very high level, the report contains 22 preliminary recommendations. It's important to note that no formal consensus call has been taken yet, that it's expected to happen prior to the final report. And as I noted as well, in a couple of areas, there are differing views, and those have been noted within the initial report with rationale outlining those different positions and in several cases as well, specific questions for community input to further help inform those deliberations. The recommendations basically address issues such as or make preliminary recommendations in relation to, you know, what are the purposes for processing a gTLD registration data, and what are the data elements required to be processed for the differing processing activities such as collection, the transfer from registrar to registry, what data is to be provided to data escrow providers, and what data is to be provided to ICANN compliance. And again, all that is detailed in the report. It contains a preliminary recommendation in relation to the redaction of data elements, which should be redacted and which shouldn't, the recommended data retention period. It provides further detail on the meaning and work that may need to be undertaken in relation to reasonable access. Again, this is prior to further work being undertaken on working on a standardized access model. It addresses the lawful basis for the processing of registration data as one of the requirements of the GDPR, and as also is described there in detail, outlines the responsible parties for each of the processing activities, and also discusses what type of agreement could or should be put in place, whether that's joint data controllers, data processors. And it also touches upon the effect of the GDPR as well as these preliminary recommendations on existing consensus policies and procedures, such as, for example, the Uniform Rapid Suspension System, the Uniform Dispute Resolution, Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution policy, as well as the transfer policy. So we did want to point out, as I said, you know, we don't have the time on the webinar here to really go into the details of each of the recommendations and you know, the different topics covered, but we wanted at a very high level to flag to you which are some of the issues where further discussion is already happening and will continue to happen, and also the areas as such where, you know, specific community input will be helpful and appreciated. So you see those listed here on the slide, and I'll just briefly run through these. You know, there are continued discussions on, you know, the appropriateness of a controller versus a joint controller agreement between ICANN and contracted parties, and there's quite a bit of detail in the report outlining the perspectives on this, and again, this is one of the topics that is under active consideration. You know, it talks about if or how should there be a distinction made between registrants as legal or natural persons? Similarly, you know, should the differentiation be made on a geographic basis? There's some questions around the lawful basis for processing data. You know, there's some conversation around whether, you know, one lawful basis applies over another and what the implications or consequences of that are. The group expects to further discuss what the impact is on the preliminary recommendations on existing policies, such as, for example, the CICOIS consensus policy. There's some questions in relation to data elements that are marked as optional. The question there is, should this be optional for a registrar to offer that contact field, or should it be required for a registrar to offer that contact field, but only optional for the registrant to actually provide that information? There's some ongoing discussions in relation to whether organization fields should be redacted. And again, the report provides some further details as to the different positions and viewpoints on that question. And there's also some further conversation expected in relation to whether a separate purpose needs to be added or included in relation to DNS security and stability research, or whether that is already a purpose that is covered by the other purposes that are included in the initial report. And as noted, you know, of course, in this short time frame, I cannot do justice to the recommendations as well as the positions that have been outlined and expressed in relation to these topics. So you're really strongly encouraged to refer to the initial report for the full details on this topic. And I'll now hand it over to my colleague, Caitlin, to take you through the second part of this presentation.
Thank you, Marika, and hello, everyone. My name is Caitlin Tubergen, and I am also a part of the staff support team for this ePDT effort. As Kurt alluded to earlier in the presentation, there are some questions related for community input within the initial report. Specifically, there are 11 questions, and rather than me reading through all of them, what we've done is we've included slides as an annex to this presentation that isolates all of the questions for community input. So following this webinar, you're welcome to download the slides and you can see all of those questions. I will note that the 11 questions touch on some of the topics that Marika and Kurt have highlighted, and they range from things like the purposes for processing data, data redaction, data retention periods, et cetera. Again, I won't go through all of them, but you're welcome to look at them following the webinar presentation. In answering these questions, what the EPDP team is looking for is a focused response and a rationale as to why you're answering the question the way you're answering the question. So in other words, simply stating that you support recommendations or you support the question isn't going to be necessarily helpful to the team. I would also add that with respect to the questions for community input, and as Marika and Kurt noted earlier, the team has taken the time to write down or to denote when there is disagreement within the team and the rationales as to why the team disagrees. So reiterating points that are already made in the report will also not necessarily be helpful to the team, but in looking at these questions, it would be helpful to note arguments that are not already denoted within the report or any new information that you would like to share with the EPDP team as it deliberates on these questions. I'll note that commenters are not required to answer all 11 questions. They're just highlighted as things that the EPDP team is specifically looking for input on. I'll also note that some of these questions may be put forth to the European Data Protection Board for feedback to help the EPDP team inform its deliberations. However, the specific questions and the method in which the team will communicate with the EDPB has not been finalized, but the team is currently communicating about that. Next, I'm going to speak a little bit about the new format that we'll be using to solicit the community's input on this initial report. For this effort, the EPDP leadership has decided to use a Google form to collect public comments. And the reason for this is that, as Marika and Kurt mentioned earlier, we have a short time frame to receive public comments, and that's 30 days. And we also have a short time frame in which to deliberate on all comments received, and we want to give due time to all of the comments received. So this online tool allows comments to be categorized specifically to questions so that when you provide feedback, for example, on recommendation 3, the EPDP team will know that this is feedback on recommendation 3 and what the rationale is as to why you agree or disagree with recommendation 3, rather than have a large, 25-page document of comments where the EPDP team or the staff support team is trying to guess at what a comment may be in reference to. Additionally, the Google form allows commenters to provide a specific reasoning or rationale for their answers. And as I mentioned before, given the short time frame and given all of the substance in this report, it would be very helpful for the EPDP team's review to have the specific rationale and any additional arguments or facts you'd like to add as to why you agree or disagree with a particular recommendation or question within the report. Commenters will still be able to provide general feedback. There are questions within the Google form that allow for that, and there's also a question at the end of the form that allows commenters to provide additional feedback that may not be tailored to a specific recommendation or question. Also, you'll notice a link on this slide that allows you to download a Word document form of the Google form that can help facilitate your online work if you're working as a group, for example, or even if you're working individually. It also allows those who are not able to access Google Forms to submit feedback that way. I will note, however, that the EPDP team leadership is strongly encouraging everyone to use this Google Form, as it will greatly help the team and staff support team and leadership review all comments received. And again, I'll note that this public comment form is open for 30 days. Because the timeline for reviewing and confirming or not the temporary specification is short, and there is no extension possible, and that deadline is December 21st. As you're filling out the Google form, and as I noted previously, you don't have to answer every question. You can answer as many or as few questions as you would like. I would like to note, and this is very important, that when you start filling out the Google form, there is a list of instructions at the beginning of the form, and you should read those very carefully. And that's because we want to make sure that your work is saved properly and you don't lose any of your work. I'd also note that similar to a traditional public comment forum, any comments that are submitted will be published so that the public can read the comments submitted. Within the Google form, you will be asked to provide an email address, and that's so that you will have the ability later on to edit your responses if you would like. But the email address that you provided will not be published within the comment forum, however your comments will be. And the next couple of slides are just a mock-up of what the Google form will look like. So as you can see, the very first thing on the Google form is that the commenter will be asked to provide its email address. And then there's a list of important instructions. So please make sure you read those before beginning to complete the Google form. This next slide shows what the email that you will receive from Google Forms will look like. So in the middle of the slide, you'll notice a light blue box that says Edit Response. By clicking on that box, you can either continue filling out the Google Form if you didn't complete it in your first go, or you can edit responses for the answers that you've already put into the form. And I will note that if you do edit a response, it will automatically populate into the document that is shown publicly. So in the event one of your responses, you'd like to change it or you entered something in error, you do have the chance to go back and it will be automatically updated. And lastly, this slide shows an example of the substance of the Google form. So I pulled one of the recommendations just as an example, and as you can see, recommendation 11 is on your screen, and the comments really asked to show its level of support for recommendation 11, and then you'll see there's a space that if you don't support the recommendation as written, you can propose edits in the box below, and then importantly, whether you support or don't support the recommendation, you're asked to provide the rationale for your answer. So noting that you support or don't support the recommendation isn't necessarily helpful to the team in its deliberations without having a rationale as to why you do or do not support. So we would kindly ask everyone to take note of those questions but ask for rationale and to fill in those answers accordingly. And that concludes the presentation for the webinar, but I would like to toss the mic back to Kurt in case there were any comments you'd like to add, Kurt. Thank you.
Thanks, Caitlin and Murky. I think that was well done. If it's all right with everyone, I'll start the I got to plug my headset in. I'm sorry. I'll start going through the questions that we received and I'll take my best shot at answering them. But if members of the EPDP team or the support team want or Rafiq as my co-chair want to answer them, that would be terrific too.
So, what on my notes? So the first was from Steve that given that most of the EPP reps are bound to represent their interests, who do we imagine will heed the views of the general community? So, you know, I'm not sure. I understand the questioner. You know, I'm afraid I'm underestimating it. But the purpose. Oh, go ahead, Steve.
Kurt, hey, thank you. Kurt, whenever we design answers, it's always important to know who the audience is for those responses. And for instance, in the BC, we're going to develop our view so that our two reps on the PDP will know what to do when they express a consensus call to get from initial to final. So that's an audience that we understand. But who, we wonder, would be the other audience for the rationale we provide? I'm thinking audiences like other members of the PDP? Well, not so much, since they are primarily listening to the audiences that they represent, the stakeholder groups and constituencies, ACs and SOs. I don't think we're writing it for staff and for you, and I don't think the board is going to pay much attention to the initial report, but probably will pay a lot of attention to comments on the final report. So it was not a trick question, Kurt, really. It was meant to surface a conversation about the audience for the replies and whether we are really open to be convinced by comments that are submitted by others, or are we all sort of locked in to represent the views of our own constituencies, stakeholder groups, ACs, and SOs. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Steve. You know, without getting too wordy, my experience in this has been that willingness to compromise on this team has come from surprising places, and the practice of being entrenched in one's position as a common practice in these sorts of exercises is also apparent. So there's sort of a combination of those. I think to the extent that as I said earlier, every stakeholder group, SOAC. Constituency is represented on this team, and the team has become pretty facile in discussing GDPR-related legal and factual issues and in great depth. And so because the commenters are more likely than not to be from those same groups, you know, I personally see that a lot of the comments will be the same sort of arguments that have already been made. So with that background, I think I have two answers for your question, that the team, if presented with different arguments or novel rationale that hasn't been considered before, I think that would be carefully considered by everyone. So I don't think there will be a lot of that, but to the extent there is, I think that would be powerful. New sources of information, what other industries are doing in the face of this as examples of how to move forward, I think would be meaningful. Second, at the end of the day, you know, the GNSO Council and the board will be will be deciding on the value of the work product here. So to the extent you want to memorialize your concerns and issues, you know, at the end of the day, they, you know, this is an avenue for making that available to them. So I hope that's beneficial in some way. Steve, is that a former hand or a new hand?
Hey, Kurt, it's an old hand. Thank you for the reply.
Okay, sure. Steve Metallis, how are you? So what timetable for addressing the gating questions and for recommending a system for standardized access to non-public, what is the timetable for addressing the gating questions so that a standardized access model can be discussed and recommended? So we just got off a GNSO Council call where we discussed this, and answers to the gating questions, you know, were scheduled for the initial report. So each of the gating questions, each of the charter questions were answered in some way in the initial report. But as was described, there hasn't been a consensus call yet. And so the GNSO Council is not going to remove their opportunity to not object to going forward with the access model discussion until the gating questions are answered. So the first answer, I have two answers. One, the first answer is the gating questions will be answered with indications of consensus final report. And to the extent any of them are done sooner, we'll inform the GNSO of that. And I think a corollary answer might be that if you think the access model discussion should move ahead before that, there's indications in the initial report about what the issues are, and that's sufficient to go ahead with that discussion, then I would urge the GNSO Council to consider that part of the charter, reconsider that part of the charter as possibly another method to move ahead with a discussion on access. So please, Steve or anybody, raise your hand if I'm not doing a good job here. Wolf Ulrich, how are you? So are all 22 recommendations missing consensus? I think this was answered in the chat. So the report tries to be clear where we have agreement, where there's agreement on a recommendation or where there's a difference and where there's, you know, sort of a split of opinion about how to proceed among the team members. That's where questions for the community are asked in this. So no consensus call has been made, but the report, I think, makes it clear where there's tentative agreement among the team that a recommendation has the support of what we call full or near consensus and where there's a difference. So Carlton asked a question about will the form for the content contain the question for which the comment is sought, and will there be an indication of what GDPR clauses, principles are in contention? So I think, and maybe Caitlin can help me here. So the questions in the form tried to go through several revisions to make it clear, a clear connection with the initial report. But certainly you have to be reading the initial, you have to read the initial report in order to understand the questions and how they link up. But we tried to put anchors in the form so that you can easily find the section in the initial report that concerns those questions. God, I mangled that sentence. But the form questions follow, you know, a lockstep or the same chronology as the report. And then Steve, you're answering answers in a Word doc version, which I think is a really good approach. It would be best for us to, if you paste from that Word doc into the Google form, because what the Google form does is then sort the comments. So we see from in one question, you know, one recommendation, say one purpose B for processing registration data, we see, you know, how many support that or support that with edits, and then immediately what the change is and immediately what the rationale is. So the team member for that purpose will be given one sheet of paper with all the rationale listed. And that's why it's a good tool, I think, for shortcoming the processing process and getting the exact words of the comments are in front of the team members that are considering this input. So it's better for the team on this side if you paste the comments into the form. But if you submit the Word form, we will preserve those words exactly and do that cutting and pasting. Thanks, Steve. So Steve, I think the next question is from Steve. How much specificity is required by GDPR when describing purposes to disclose a third party? Thomas, do you want to answer that? I'm getting pretty good at this. I think I could answer that question, but because most of the people on this call know, and I'm sure Steve knows, that we have letters from the Data Protection Board that sort of indicate what that is. But I'll just pause for a second to see if anybody on the EPDP team wants to take Steve's question. How much specificity is required by GDPR when describing purposes to disclose to a third party? Thanks, everyone. So I'll take a shot at this question. Not being the expert in the group, but my recollection that I think is correct is that the Data Protection Board wrote to ICANN and called out the process for processing data. I think that was B in the, or number two of 13 purposes in the temporary specification as not being specific enough. So it wasn't specific enough just to show that disclosure would be made to third parties in cases where the legitimate interest of the party seeking the data was not overridden by the privacy interest of the data subject, which is really just a recitation of Article 6.1F of the GDPR. And so they in some other writings they suggested if we tie that disclosure to where the purpose was to serve the security and stability interests in the DNS and in the data controllers data controllers interest in security and stability or other specific things. And so you'll see in the purpose that's written, purpose two, in the recommendations. It's recommendation number one, purpose two, that answer was carefully worded to address both the concerns that the right audiences are included in as members of the third party and also address the specificity concerns listed by the GDPR in their answer to ICANN. Steve?
Yeah, the first part of your answer was the Data Protection Board told us that we weren't specific enough first time around at ICANN. I get that. My question was really how much more specific must we be? Because as an alternate and an observer on the PDP, that we've gone back and forth about how specific to be in that particular purpose. And sure, there's a floor for how specific we know we must be. But we don't really know how high we have to go on specificity. And I'm wondering that that's the kind of an example we might be able to cite if we were aware of anyone else who's doing a 6.1F evaluation or balancing test to know the level of specificity that we need to put in to our purpose. I realize we need to be more specific than ICANN was in their initial letter to the Data Protection Board, but I don't think we know how specific we really need to be. Thanks.
Right, and I think that's, thank you, Steve. I think that's one of the challenges, right, is trying to find that that right amount of specificity when a law is new rather than when a law is, you know, been on when there's case law and examples built up. And I think your idea of searching for other examples is a good one. Jorge, what are your plans to involve the EU data protection authorities in responding to these questions? So the team, I'll answer part of this, and I welcome anybody on the team to help me answer this question from Jorge, and that is, we think that, and I don't know if Thomas answered this in chat or not, so I haven't seen that because of when I can't talk and read at the same time. But the team is considering writing a letter to the European Data Protection Board with certain questions, and we're in the process now of taking materials out of the initial report. Our discussion's been modeling those questions. One is we want to be very careful about the questions we ask and ensure they're at the appropriate level for them and that they'll be received positively. And two is we have a concern that if they are answered, they'll be answered kind of late in the day. So that's one avenue we're pursuing. I don't know what if anybody has any other material, Stephanie might have something to say. And Theo, I want to thanks for your question. Why are we discussing disclosure in a webinar? So that's a line we carefully tread in every meeting. And certainly, you've been in the discussions and been very constructive in mapping out how data is processed. And there's not just disclosure to third parties, but there's disclosure to third parties who are escrow providers, disclosure to third parties who are dispute resolution providers, and so on. And in some cases, a registry operator might also be a third party. So disclosure is often discussed, and we try to draw it's semantics, but we try to draw the line between disclosure to third parties and, how third parties can access data, which is the conversation to come later. I'm feeling my answers are less and less effective as we go on. Yeah, thanks, Jorge, for that comment. Right, and just to amplify Amar's comment in the chat, the charter states that the EPDP team should, but not must, send a copy of the initial report to the Data Protection Board, and that recently that came up you know, essentially an hour ago in the GNSO Council meeting, and Council is deciding, is discussing how that might be handled. So I just want to, for those that want to understand more about the content and how it was developed, one source is the high interest session that was held in Barcelona that discussed the processes and the data mapping and the data processing analysis. So that link is in the slides, which if not downloadable, should be soon or delivered soon. So let me just ask the support team, are there any questions that remain to be answered, or for anybody here, is there any questions that I inadequately answered that we should discuss a little further? I just want to go ahead, Steve.
Thank you, Steve Del Bianco. This has been discussed in the deep PDP, and Stephanie Perrin has just indicated in the Adobe chat at least one opinion that says that we shouldn't be asking questions of the Data Protection Board for fear of annoying them. I know other opinions say that if we ask the Data Protection Board, they should be very well formed with enough background that we can get a definitive answer. And I get all that. But my read of the Data Protection Board is that one of its roles is to provide binding guidance when presented with a sufficiently specific scenario for which they can determine whether that would constitute a violation of GDPR. And so it's important for everyone listening in on this webinar to understand that we're in a tug of war inside of the PDP about whether and how to ask questions of the Data Protection Board, even though we all acknowledge, even Stephanie, we acknowledge that we're operating with a very vague and fuzzy understanding of what it is the Data Protection Board will do when they interpret GDPR in light of a complex system like WHOIS. So if at all possible, let's see if we can come to an answer about how soon can we possibly ask the Data Protection Board for binding guidance with a sufficient specificity to help us. And I certainly don't think that we have to avoid asking questions for fear of annoying a Data Protection Board when it is part of their job to consider questions and give guidance. Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen. And we're going to have a series of calls on that topic starting today. And for the team members that are going to be attending those, or for anyone that wants to provide me with input, you know, first, I think the questions need to be very well formed and appropriately framed for the GDPR and for the Data Protection Board and the purpose for which they've been established. Given that, you know, I want to understand the downside of annoying them. So even if we annoy them, you know, what's the downside to us? Because I'd rather, you know, bug somebody in an attempt to get more information rather than to give up that opportunity to get that information out of what Steve said, out of a concern for annoying them. But I don't fully understand all the relationships. So to the extent Stephanie and others can inform me and the team about the downside of asking questions, if they're not well received, is there more of a downside than just getting a no answer or a letter back that says that? So I think that's something I'd want to understand going forward. And I think too, reading Stephanie's thing, you know, I'd like to make our questions to the Data Protection Board not from ICANN but from us. So I don't know exactly how to make that differentiation, but we're not the team that's been dealing with this issue for, I don't forget what Stephanie said, 18 years or something like that, but we're the team that's been dealing with this issue for 18 weeks. And so I want to, I think we should try to differentiate ourselves from the previous asker of those questions. So I think that's all the questions we have. Steve, thanks very much for your active participation, and actually both Steve's and everybody else that asked questions. Support staff, can you please wrap this up and describe how the slides can be downloaded, how this presentation can be found that those weren't able to attend, and is there any facility for those that have questions to ask them after this so we can ask them so they can ask them either about the material in this presentation or about the common forum.
Yes, thank you, Kurt. This is Marika. I'll post now the link to the wiki page where the slides are already posted and where the recording and transcript from this meeting will also be made available. If you have any further questions, please feel free to follow up with any of us directly. There's also the general policy staff email address in the public comment forum that you can also use for your questions. I'm of course happy to assist and help you as needed. We do encourage you all, as we've said as well in the chat, we know that this is a new approach to public comment, but we really hope that you'll all be able to willing to work with us and the EPDP team to try out this new forum, because we really hope that it will facilitate both your input as well as the subsequent review and analysis by the EPDP team of the comments. As several have noted, there are ways as well, because I've noted several of you have asked about how to collaborate with your respective groups. There is a Word document available that you can use, and of course you can choose to make that available as a Google Doc for your groups to collaborate on. And then, of course, once you've completed that, you're able to copy and paste that into the Google form. We know it takes a little bit of work, and we do appreciate all of you that are willing to work with that for this this effort. I think that's all I have. Just want to thank everyone for their participation, and Kurt, back to you. Any closing remarks?
No, thanks. I think I've finished. So I'm just looking at the chat. Thanks very much for attending, everyone. I hope you found it useful, and please feel free to send additional questions or information, as Marika indicated, or contact me directly. That'd be fine. Have a great rest of your day. So long.
Thank you, everyone. Once again, the webinar has been adjourned. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines. Operator, if you could please stop all recordings.